This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Everybody, this is episode number 80 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Now, when we came to you all last week, we were in the middle of all of the election coverage. Like, it was all shaking down as we were getting to record the episode. And now that the election's over, I think we've all spent like the last week just sort of recovering. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Still recovering.
Still recovering. I think it says a lot about my emotional state when I have a big bag of Halloween candy sitting on my desk and I haven't, it's like half full and I just munch at every opportunity. And that's kind of how I'm going to get through this time. I don't know about you all.
Yeah.
But hopefully we can give everybody something to be entertained by and to laugh at tonight. And we're going to get started with you, Chris. So Chris, you went to Columbus.
I did.
How did that go?
It was really awesome. However, I would not recommend anyone driving that far on their own because, like, 2 hours in, I was just like, so there's the road, and I got music. But it was just weird to be by myself because I've just never driven 5+ hours on my own before, so it was an adventure in and of itself. Columbus was really dope. First off, it's a really awesome city. I was really impressed. It seemed very progressive and just it had that big city feel to it, which I always enjoy when I go to larger cities. Some have kind of that smaller city feel. Like even when I went to Boston, it just felt very small, mm-hmm. even though it was a big city. And so I definitely appreciated that. And it just seemed like they have a lot of really nice restaurants that are kind of kitschy. And I'm always down with kitsch. So that was really cool. And we were actually in the hotel that was next to the convention center, so that was nice to have to just kind of like whoop, get my backpack and walk a little bit, and then I was there. That was the first time I had ever actually been to that convention center. It wasn't bad. It had a little food court and stuff, which I thought was pretty cool, because at first I was like, where is the food? I'm so used to food being accessible, especially when we go to like the opens in Milwaukee. There's like food, you know, carts like right outside, and so you can just go buy stuff. I did do the main event. I didn't end up so hot, but I still had a winning record, and so I was happy about that. 5-4, nothing to be sad about. The first round I had to play versus the Titan Shift Mirror, and that was less than ideal, because it's all about who gets there faster, and I accept that. So that was a loss. I went on to face Bushwhacker Zoo. Lost to that, but I think it was just that I maybe didn't prioritize things correctly like I should have, because usually that matchup is not terrible for me. Again, it's just a race. So I was kind of sad being like, well, if I don't win the next couple, then I'm pretty much just done regardless. Round three, I played a Bant Eldrazi player that I have a sneaking suspicion was possibly new to Modern, because they ended up scooping to me in the second game. When I think I couldn't go off or something was going on, and I had gone to get Summoner's Pact and was going to get Titan, and he was just like, okay, that's going to be like 16+, so good games. And I was like, what? Like, I can't, and I'm thinking in my head, I can't cast this just yet. I have to pay for it at my upkeep. Okay. I'm like, are you sure you want to concede? And he was like, yep. I'm like, alrighty then. So that was my first win. So I swept Bant Eldrazi. I do think that he did play it well. I just think that maybe he wasn't as familiar with what I was doing. I went on to lose to a very enthusiastic Infect player.
Aren't they all, though?
It's like, can you believe I just did this? It's just like, I can. I mean, I guess now I have the rest of my round, but but that it was all right. I was just like, this is just what happens with Infect. I accept that. I played a American Delver list again, and I ended up sweeping them, if I remember correctly. Very nice guy. I think I told him about the podcast. Maybe. I can't remember. But he was a joy to play against. A lot of nice people that I got to meet, so I'll get to that in a minute. I got to play 8-rack the round after that. Mm. Lost out of 3. Mm. So kind of a disappointing loss, but the guy I played against was, like, super awesome, and he was just like, I just love 8-rack. And I'm thinking, you have a kindred spirit somewhere, that's for sure. And so I mentioned Turn One Thoughts used him. He was like, oh, yeah, I watch all their YouTube videos. I'm like, yes. I'm like, Aaron is your kindred spirit. Mm-hmm. I played Kiki Evolution after that, beat them, beat Blue-Red Prowess afterwards, and then went on to beat Jund. And that was wonderful because typically I haven't had myself at least a good track record versus Jund with Titan Shift. I know a lot of people will say that we're very favored in that matchup, but for some reason, maybe I'm not... Not that I'm not piloting the deck well, but just that maybe I just need to get my priorities more in order when it comes to Jund. But I felt good about that win. I did meet quite a few listeners while I was there, and so that was really nice. I got to meet up with... Tyler, and he actually gave me a safety pin. He was saying on his Twitter that he was going to be handing out safety pins for those who wanted to show support for disenfranchised people because of the whole Trump shenanigans. And so I was like, sweet. I'm like, I want one. And then he gave me some extra ones so I could pass them out to other people. I got to meet up with Jaren. He also does a podcast. So we got to talk for like just a few minutes before we had to go on to our next round. I met a listener named Sean who was really cool. He was telling me how much he really enjoyed our gender episode and that he had like a lot of similar thoughts about, you know, how to, you know, address people or talk to people or even just the subjects that we were talking about. And he said he had actually had a really awesome talk with his wife about the episode. So that was really cool. And just said how much he loved the show. And so it was lovely meeting him. And then I also met Aaron, who is a judge. He's a level 2, and so he lives not too far from where everything was taking place, so I got to talk to him quite a bit, and he really digs the show, and it was just awesome just to keep on reconnecting with people throughout the day and just be like, oh, how are you doing? Oh, you lost. Oh, that sucks. You know, hope you win the next one, and I just had a really good time. I got to have some custom tokens made by Inkling Customs, and that was really cool, so I got a snail token made. I didn't post that one on social media, but it, on its shell it says GP or Magic GP or Bust on it. I love it. It's so cute. And then I also had a Valakut token made of me erupting as Valakut.
I saw that. I love it.
I love it so much.
I died when I saw it. Like, I was totally like just geeking out in front of the booth. I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. It was just like so cute. Like, it came to me like while I was getting ready to like go to sleep one night. I'm like, oh, that's what I want them to do. So
it,
they did.
It reminded me of the when we went to go see Inside Out together, Chris, and they had that little the short beforehand of like the two volcanoes falling in love.
Oh yeah.
Oh. And I was like, oh, I hope Chris finds their volcano so they can be happy volcanoes together.
I'm a very, very happy volcano. So that was like one of the big highlights of the trip. And I told Jennifer when I went up there, I was like, you know, I really was trying to decide when I was going to come up here and get my token, if I was going to wait for a couple losses to do it, so I had something to be happy about. So I did. And then, let's see, I got to talk to Mrs. M and just hang out with other people. My friend Donnie was kind enough to let me stay with him and his buddies, so I got to know them a little better, and we kind of just spent the whole time talking about Magic, having great food. We went to some really cool places to eat. We went to this place called Thurman's that has these ginormous burgers. Like, I watched his friend Mike eat one that literally was like about as tall as probably like a 20-ounce soda.
Wow.
Like, it was that big. Yes, and he ate the whole thing.
Oh my gosh.
I was just like, shut. And it was like awesome. So when they first brought it to the table, I'm like, let me take a picture of that. And so I did. And there's like a picture of him licking it. It's just like the best thing ever. So we ate there. We ate at a place called Oliver's that specializes in mostly burgers and stuff like that. But I decided to get their mac and cheese, and it was to die for. And we ended up going to a barcade that was called 16-Bit, which was next to a very, like, woke hot dog place that played The Cure and just had some really awesome people in there, two of which complimented me on my gender pronouns pin, which I thought was really awesome. And I don't know, I just had a good feeling while I was there. I had an awesome time. I was kind of sad that I had to leave because it was going to be kind of an arduous journey back home. But all in all, I'm very glad I went. I like being able to travel to these events as long as they're within a pretty reasonable driving distance. And I'm just looking forward to, I think, the next big event's the GP in Milwaukee in December. So I'm just ready to play more Magic.
Yeah. It sounds like you faced a nice mixture of decks, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Nothing was too far out there, which I was thankful for, because after, like, the egg shenanigans in Dallas, I was like, please, no. Please, no lantern. No, no eggs, no anything. It's like, fine, I'll try to navigate through 8-Rack, because I haven't played 8-Rack with Titan Shift yet, so that was kind of nice. And, yeah, I just had an awesome time, and it was just really cool to be able to meet up with people, and that's my favorite part about going to these events.
It's funny that you mentioned the opponent who sort of scooped before the Summoner's Pact or before you could pay for it. I get that a lot with Ad Nauseam. Like, I remember one time in particular, I had cast spoils from the vault to find the missing piece that I needed, and I ended up exiling a couple of lands, and I was about to go off. And I started to discard lands to my Lightning Storm, and he stopped me. He's like, okay, I'm good. Okay. I'm dead. And then as he, you know, was signing his things and I was putting my cards away, I realized that I had exactly enough land to kill him. And mm-hmm. So if he had waited it out, and if he had maybe tried to, like, discard a land, all he had to do was discard one land to redirect the storm back to me, and I would have been fucked. So I always tell people, if you're going to play a combo deck, make them show you the combo, because you might still, there are those corner cases where, you know, either you don't have enough mountains, Chris being Scapeshift, or I don't have enough lands to discard back to the Lightning Storm, you know, and there are those cases where you might still win. So I always tell people, if they're going to be on the other side of it, make them show you the kill.
Oh yeah, totally.
And there's another one. There's another one that can get newer Modern players sometimes, like, I guess Splinter Twin is not in the format currently, but that doesn't mean it won't come back. I saw a few people who would play, like, a Deceiver Exarch on their turn, mm-hmm. and then just show their opponent the Splinter Twin, and you can't win that turn because it doesn't have haste. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I've seen people scoop to that trick too. Just, you know, knowing your opponent's deck and what it does is super important, especially in Modern, because mm-hmm. you know, they can get a lot of free wins just not necessarily doing their combo either the right way, or, you know, don't have enough whatever it may be to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm always happy to do that. Like, I know a lot of times I'll face opponents who don't know what Ad Nauseam does, and, you know, they get very flustered. And one of the first things I always say to them is, I'll walk you through it. Like, I don't expect you to just fold just because I did this. Like, I'm more than happy to play the Lightning Storm, discard the lands, and go through it. I've never been that type of person who's like, oh, you're going to make me do this. No, I'd rather do that, because I know, mm-hmm. you know, going back to our ethics talk last week, I know how often that could be abused, and I just don't mm-hmm. want to be that kind of player. Mm-hmm. Speaking mm-hmm. of, I had a listener send us a quick question. They really enjoyed our discussion about ethics last week, and they asked a question about how we feel about, let's say that you have a player who brings along an Infect token, but they're not playing Infect. Where do you rank that on, like, the ethics scale? Like, how crummy is that? If it's crummy at all.
I don't think that's crummy at all.
Okay.
Me neither. I never mm-hmm. use the right tokens.
Oh, no. I mean, like, they're not even playing anything that requires tokens. Like, they're doing it simply because they want you to think they're playing Infect.
Oh, like, they take it out beforehand and, like, put it on their deck box or something?
Yeah. And they lay it on the table, and they want you to think they're playing Infect, but they're not.
I personally don't think that's... I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe it could be considered crummy, but that wouldn't bother me personally.
Okay.
Like, I never look at anything they have. I mean, some people try and play, like, bring a blue deck box and they're playing mono red. Like, I don't know. Things like that just don't faze me. And I always bring incorrect tokens. I hope nobody thinks I'm being crummy by, like, just having the wrong tokens. But I'm not one of those people who's going to dig out, like, angel tokens or something. So in my opinion, that doesn't bother me. I wouldn't care. I wouldn't think anything of it because he could be representing anything with it. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm in basically the same boat. I actually go out of my way to have correct tokens, but I don't take them out of my deck box until they would come into play because I don't want to give anything away. But I'm in the same boat in that I can see how someone would think it was crummy, but I am so desensitized to it at this point that I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm the type of player who, you know, I've made those mistakes before. You know, I've made the mistake of, you know, you see your opponent shuffling and all of a sudden you see a card and then, you know, you think you know what they're on and then you have no idea. So I've been burned by that before. So I tend to not judge or try to figure out what my opponent's playing until I actually see the cards come down, because I've made that mistake before. And so I think it's not something I would recommend. Like, I wouldn't encourage, like, if I had a friend who was doing that, I'd be like, girl, like, I wouldn't encourage it, but I don't think it's up there with anything we discuss necessarily.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I would consider it a taunt at the very least, and I like taunts, so I'm okay with that.
Chris is like, bring it on.
Yeah. So speaking of bringing it on, Katie, you played in your Mojo tournament this past weekend?
I did, yes.
And how did that go?
It was interesting. I have not played Sealed in a long time, so it was kind of a refresher. I was like, I need to know what these cards do. My pool was, it seemed pretty strong and it had a lot of removal, but it was very across the board in all five colors. I actually picked out the playables in each color and I could not make a two color deck that was 23 playables out of any two colors. So, I played a three color deck. I played red, white, black, and, I was pretty happy with my build. There was one card that I, like, consistently switched out, so that was probably just a building mistake on my part. But I went 2-3. It wasn't anything impressive. I played against that damn Sky Sovereign ship thing. Always just wrecks me. But I played against a judge from Chile, who was very friendly. I played against another judge who was like, I never play Modo and I'm just losing to myself. And I saw him click through a few things. He clicked through his first turn on accident, but we were just kind of lamenting over the fact that neither one of us is very proficient in Modo, and I clicked through some triggers and stuff. But I just went in with a really casual mind and I had a lot of fun. It was really cool to see, to just know that the stakes weren't super high. I mean, it was a Phantom event and you got one booster per win. And simultaneously, there was a judge forum going on. So people were kind of telling about their bad beat stories and, you know, their progress or lack thereof for some of us, within the tournament. And overall, it was just really fun. I wanted to build a vehicles deck if I got the cards, but I had like no vehicles, so it wasn't happening. But a lot of the decks that I played against that seemed really good were the ones that had vehicles. And so hopefully someday I'll get to play a vehicle deck because they look really fun. But crewing was not in the cards for me. But in between rounds, I was like playing WoW and doing my world quests. So I had just a very nerdy weekend and I just like played video games the whole time and it was great.
It sounds like the tournament certainly did its job of being like a team building exercise, you know, like you said, of getting judges to sort of commiserate and, you know, compare notes on things. And it sounds like at least that part went well.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really good.
Do you wish that you had more time to play those? I know it sounds like you really enjoy the set. And I feel like if you were able to really, you know, play the set more and learn the cards better, like I could see you really killing it in this format.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard because life gets so stressful sometimes, that I actually have to prioritize Magic over like cleaning my house or going to the grocery store, like normal daily activities, because there's not very much time for those. But when I do get to play it, I feel like playing it less has made me more casual, which is making me have more fun while I do it. There are certainly times where I play and I feel like when I'm not doing well, it's not fun, but I can't really be too harsh on myself when I don't have time to, you know, practice and all of that. But I have Thanksgiving break off as well as Christmas break, and I'm hoping you know, I'm going home, so I'll get to go to my local game store and do some drafts and stuff. So I'm hoping to kind of like end the season on a stronger note, even though I couldn't, you know, play in the first half of the release of this set. But it's definitely been an adjustment to go from a grinder to like playing like once or twice, you know, a month, if that. And I still follow articles and stuff. I have time to read them in between classes and all that, but playing is just becoming a really, you know, it's a time consuming thing. So I'm hoping over the next few breaks that I can play more and hopefully do a little bit better than my losing record so far.
Well, I'm glad that you're having fun with the game, at least. You know, I know sometimes, mm-hmm. I know some people have a very difficult time being competitive and having fun. And maybe it's not that they're not having fun per se, but the competition part tends to take over.
Yeah.
And I know that for as long as I'd known you, you know, before you started really getting into school, Katie, you were really competitive. And, you know, it's really nice to see sort of the pendulum swing the other way where you are having more fun.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I feel like your ratio might have been like 75% competition, 25% fun. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like you're kind of the opposite. And that's always good to see, you know, because I feel like some people, all they know how to do is compete. And I feel like it's really important to have the other side too.
Yeah. And I felt like it was always a different kind of fun. I mean, in competitive scenes, like, I love traveling and I love being with my play group and like the road tripping part of it and bad beat stories. And here I don't really have that. Not that I've, you know, tried very much currently, but the fun has to come from the play. Like I had to kind of relearn how to enjoy the game for the game rather than enjoying the game for the people I was playing the game with. And that's just been a little bit of an adjustment, but it seems to be working so far.
The fun comes from the play. I love that.
Yeah.
So do I.
So I also played a bunch of Magic this weekend. I officially dipped my toe back in the Standard. I've been practicing for the Invitational, the Star City Games Invitational next month, because it is dual format. It is Standard and Modern. I have green-black Delirium built, and counting to 13 is hard, you guys. I tried to cast Emrakul 3 times in one game and was wrong every single time. So the first time I tried to cast her, I thought she only cost 10 for some reason. So I play my little Traverse the Woven Wald and I get my little Emrakul and I'm like, oh, I'm so excited. And I tap my lands and I'm like, bam! And my opponent goes, I see 4 card types and I see 6 lands and Emrakul costs 13. And I was like... Okay, that's fine. I'm gonna totally get this. It's fine. So I'm holding it in my hand, and a couple turns later, I've got my little couple of more lands out. I'm like, okay, Emrakul. My opponent goes, that's 5 card types and 7 lands. And my friend next to me is just like, girl. So I'm like, okay, I got this. So one more time. And then I screwed it up again.
Oh, Aaron.
And my friend Corey looks at me. My friend Corey's a very sassy bear. And he goes, you can play Storm, and you can play Dredge, and you can play Ad Nauseam, but Delirium makes you struggle. And I couldn't figure out what was so wrong. Like, I'm losing count of, like, you know, I have my, like, my little green dice on the graveyard so I can keep track of my card types and it was so hard. And I was like, what is wrong with me? I was like, I can go off with Storm, but I can't count to 13. I can't keep track of how many card types I have in the graveyard. I was like, why is this so difficult? But I had a lot of fun. Like, when I did manage to, like, get Emrakul out, like, you know, sort of seeing that feeling, seeing my opponent's face when they realized they had to deal with Emrakul was a really cool feeling. And I also realized that I was playing it wrong. Like, I was playing it as sort of like this green, like a typical rock deck. And what I didn't understand after reading a bunch of articles is that you basically just want to slam Ishkana on turn 5 every time. And everything you do before that is to sort of pave the way for her. So you want to be minusing Liliana aggressively. You want to be filling your graveyard. You want to be doing all of these things. You want to be getting Grim Flayer out there, and you almost always want to be getting Ishkana on the board on turn 5 with Delirium, because she acts as sort of your bridge to the late game. And once you get her out and you get that 11 toughness on the board, you're fucking home free. And I was sort of playing it wrong, where like I was just sort of piddling and playing a bunch of dumb things, and turn 5 would come around. It's like, I'm gonna play Grapple with Pass. Get out of that Grapple. sure what package is that? And it's like, no, no, this is what you need to be doing. Like, ideally, you want to be like, turn 4 Mind Rack, turn 5 Ishkana. And I was just doing it all wrong. And so once I started really reading up on it, it made a lot more sense. And then I started being a lot more successful with the deck. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. Grim Flayer is a trip. I'm still trying to figure out how that card works. And it was exciting for the most part. I did play in the Legacy Challenge and bombed. I dropped it 0-3. And then I did a backup stream afterwards and had a lot of fun. My first official stream is tomorrow. I will be streaming every Tuesday and Thursday night, thanks to Card Hoarder. And I'm really excited. I can't wait to play a bunch of decks, and I can't wait to have people on and teach me how to play their decks. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun, so hopefully I'm able to entertain people and keep this going.
Cool. I can't wait for you to teach me how to play Dredge. So I at least like understand it.
Speaking of teaching,
she
Mrs.
has
Mulligan.
Many acolytes.
Yeah,
right
Mrs.
Now.
Mulligan took Dredge this weekend, and she slayed. Like, I was so proud of her. She finished at like 6-3, but like she started off really, really strong. And I was just watching her on Twitter, and I was like, "Go, Mulligan, go!" And I just felt so happy for her because I kind of taught her, and so that was great. But yeah, I'm down to like, I'd love to have Chris on and teach me like Mono Blue Tron, and I would love to have, you know, Jadine on and teach me Infect and things like that. And so the plan is to have people kind of come on with me and teach me how their decks work and just have a really good time.
Cool.
Yeah. So speaking of Standard, Saffron Olive wrote a really interesting article today about how Standard is suffering because there aren't any hate cards. If you go back and look at the cards throughout Magic's history, you see cards like Boil, you see cards like Armageddon, you see things like Stony Silence that exist to sort of keep decks in check or strategies in check. And, you know, he brings up the fact that, you know, Collected Company was so dominant for a while and there didn't really seem to be anything stopping it. And then before that was Rally the Ancestors, and how both of these decks just went on for so long and that there either weren't any hate cards to defeat them or that the hate cards just weren't very good. And, you know, with Magic kind of going back to the 2-year rotation, you know, are we sort of in for that again, and what that means for the format? You know, Hallie, what do you think about this? Like, do you think that Standard suffers when we don't have things like the Graftdigger's Cages and the Rest in Pieces and things like that?
I think it definitely does. I mean, you can look at what happened earlier this year as a big indicator of that. The Collected Company decks just kind of ran rampant for the first, you know, half of this year between like the Rally decks and just the plain old Bant Coco decks. The card was just everywhere. And even when people brought in cards like, I'm trying to remember what it was called, the Hallowed Moonlight, you know, the Wizards printed Hallowed Moonlight and thought this is going to be the answer to Collected Company. But the thing was, the deck, especially the Rally decks, could go off without casting Collected Company. It was like it was not what they needed all the time. So it's definitely a very complex problem. And I know Saffron Olive was pointing out that there are some cards that have been printed in the past that would never fly right now. We can never have a Stasis or a Winter Orb or an Armageddon. But I think cards like Hate Bears, like creatures with abilities on them that, you know, punish you for playing a certain strategy, are a really great way to go. Like, that was why I played Anafenza for a lot of the time that she was in Standard. And I think we need more of that in this environment. We just don't really have it.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same wavelength. Like, my favorite time in Standard was probably Return to Ravnica. And it was like kind of when I just started playing, but we had, you know, Thragtusk and Detention Sphere and Supreme Verdict and all these different cards, you know, like one after another. And it seemed like the games were very in-depth and very, like, thought-provoking games. And I feel like ever since then, Standard has kind of decreased in its amount of, like, fun for me. And it might, after reading this article, I was like, maybe that's why. Like, maybe it's because, you know, every time there's, you know, I'm thinking about what deck to play, and I'm like, well, what about this? And somebody's like, well, it can't beat X, and X happens to be the top deck in the, you know, in the meta. And it's like, well, what about this? And it's like, well, you still can't beat X, so... And, you know, that makes, like, your deck choice limited, and it also makes your games not very fun if you don't have a great matchup against that. You know, going through a GP, if you're playing 9 rounds in a day, and 6 of them are the top deck in the meta, and you don't have a good way to deal with it, and it's not a very fun deck to play against in the first place, then it's just like, why am I playing standard? Maybe I should just go play something else. You're always going to hear the people who complain about Blood Moon, and I know Rest in Peace is not Aaron's favorite card, but I do think they have, you know, their place, and I really like how Wizards was doing it, where for a set, you know, a certain deck archetype could run rampant. Like, I want to see Graveyard have their time in the, you know, time to shine, and I want to see Control have its time, and I want to see even Mono Red and aggro strategies have their time, but then I also want to see Wizards, like, when a new set comes out, maybe temper that back and give something else a time to shine. And it seems like in the last few years, we have not seen different decks being able to have their time. It's like one deck's getting all the spotlight and nobody else can do anything about it. And so I do wish that they would print something, you know, the way they were doing it. I don't think that it's a super big barrier to entry for new players. I think it's just kind of part of the game. And I do agree with his statement where he said that if standard is going to be, you know, a lasting format that people want to play, that something should be done so that it, you know, is a little bit more fun for the majority.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like that's part of the reason why I haven't been too interested in standard. There, A, aren't a lot of decks that are grabbing me, and B, if I did find something that I wanted to play, I just don't know how well it would hang with everything else. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting that he brought up a point about other cards don't necessarily get to get played because other cards are so oppressive depending on the situation. Like, when I think about cards that have come out and I'm like, wow, that card seemed like it would be really sweet, but then because XYZ deck is running all these other things, there's just no way anyone would ever play that card because either A, there's something better, or B, it's not worth trying to mess with that deck. I just feel like they need to do something to kind of spice it up, because they need to have something to keep, like Aaron said before, those other decks in check. That is one reason why I really like playing Modern, is because I feel like there are answers to, you know, even some very oppressive decks. You know, you can find an answer to get around a lot of different situations. And I feel like in Standard right now, that's not really the case. And it is kind of disappointing because I don't think that there would be as many feel-bads as Wizards might think. Because that's just a part of playing Magic, is there are things that are going to shut your deck down. That is just what happens. And trying to find a way around it is part of the key. It's part of playing the game. I think it enhances the game even more because you're using, like, critical thinking to figure out, well, how can I get around this? You know, even if you have the card that's going to shut their shit down, you still need to know how to use it. You still need to know how to pilot your deck effectively. And that is something that I think that is kind of missing right now, and it would be really nice if it would show back up again, because maybe then I'd be more inclined to play Standard than I am currently.
Yeah, I actually have kind of an opposite attitude about this. You know, I can't help but think about a lot of the complaints that I hear about Modern, and specifically with regards to the fact that silver bullets like this do exist, and that, you know, if you're lucky enough to, you know, get your one copy of Stony Silence against Affinity, well, you've just sort of shut Affinity down. Or if you're able to, you know, get that Aven Mind Sensor that can stop Scapeshift, you know, the fact that you can be shut down with simply one card, you know, I understand that that makes Modern unpopular for some people. You know, we were naming the reasons why we wouldn't play Standard. I know a lot of people that don't enjoy Modern for that reason. And so I worry that, you know, it would be another turnoff for the format. Like, I definitely agree that there could stand to be more hate cards where, you know, you have things like Hallowed Moonlight, but it's really narrow. And if you're not playing white, what are you supposed to do? Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't something, it's not like there was one thing in every color that could have really dealt with that deck. And so, you know, I can agree with the fact that there needs to be more answers, but I don't think they need to be as good as a silver bullet. Because otherwise we run the risk of running into a Modern situation and then people become unhappy too. And, you know, I also think that, you know, another thing we like to criticize Wizards about is the fact that they don't think of older formats, and that, you know, again, I worry that if they print these cards to sort of appease the Standard folks, they're going to have implications for the Modern format and implications for the Legacy format, where, you know, you might be creating more hate for decks in older formats that are already having a hard time, or there's enough hate out there and you might keep them down too. And so I think that there's a lot of things to think about when making making this decision. I don't think it's as simple as, you know, trying to fix standard, you know, because whatever they do to standard is going to have effects down the line, which is why they don't reprint a lot of things. You know, they can't reprint Lilia. You can't put Lilia out of the Veil in standard, because just nothing good would come from that. You can't put Cabal Therapy in standard, you know? And so I think that there could stand to be more. I just don't think they need to be as strong, as some people are suggesting. You know, like Hallie said, we don't necessarily need another stasis, or we don't need another choke, but we can certainly do a lot better than Hallowed Fountain or, you know, Negate. You know, there has to be something in the middle, I think. So they also made an announcement today, Wizards of the Coast. They're announcing standard showdowns. And from November 26th through December 17th, stores around the world will be able to host standard showdown tournaments on Saturdays, with special promo prize boosters earned through undefeated play and other means as determined by each stores. The tournaments will be Swiss, meant to showcase the standard format. It basically sounds like treasure chests, but like in paper form for those of us who play online. I mean, does this excite any of you? Does this make you want to do it?
Not.
I want to know what the other means are.
That's so interesting. Where I'm at. Oh, so this isn't enough to really get you to build standard, Chris?
No. Like, I mean, if you get the three cards, and it's like, okay, but I know that they're. I know that there had been some people complaining about whether or not, you know, their store would be able to have such an event, maybe because they're a smaller shop or they're in a smaller town. And I guess I just want to know exactly how different places would structure it. I'm not opposed to the idea for those that would really enjoy it or for stores that maybe standard has been lacking as of late and it gives an incentive to have standard players show up again or maybe people that, you know, decided to play modern instead of standard because they weren't enjoying it. Maybe this will kind of reignite that fire in them. So for maybe them, it's okay. But I'm just kind of like, like if it was other means, like if you show up, you might have a random chance of doing it and be like, okay, well, randomly, or if they give them out kind of like my store does with their F&M promos, they just do it randomly and be like, eh, maybe I'll do that. So I don't know. But it doesn't seem like it's for me. But if others enjoy it, more power to them.
Yeah, I'm lukewarm on this as well, but I do like that it's an option for some players. I know when we've talked about the PPTQ format in the past, we've talked about how, you know, for some players will find themselves kind of out of their depth if they show up to their store wanting to play Magic and, you know, there's a PPTQ going on. So I like this as another casual and store player friendly alternative to F&M, or something you can play in addition to F&M if you really want to get more reps in with your standard deck. So I think it's a good option, but not one that I'd necessarily explore for myself.
Yeah, Hallie, that's a really good point. You know, you brought up sort of the, you know, one of the things that I've sort of, I guess, I don't want to say complained about, but the fact that there's nothing to really bridge the gap from F&M to like a larger event where like you're doing F&M, you're doing well at F&M, and then people are like, well, your next step is go to a GP, and you're like, I don't know if I'm ready for nine rounds of this. And so I think that these are a great sort of filler event or a way to sort of test your mettle if you feel like you've done everything below it, like you've done the game day, you've done the F&M, and now you want to try something more. I think this is a great event to keep you busy.
Yeah,
and handing out 10 boosters for each event seems kind of like a strange number. Like, it's not like top 8 gets one. Like, you have to do something with those 10. But when I read this, I was like, oh yeah, it's just like treasure chests where you might just get two like 50 cent rares and maybe a dollar rare. Like, that doesn't seem super fun, but like, I think a lot of players would just prefer packs because then, I mean, you could draft them. Like, you have basically the same chance of getting something. But yeah, I do agree that it's a good, good way to bridge, you know, between F&M and PPTQ. It's just, it doesn't make me more excited to play standard personally.
I don't know. I think keeping the prize support kind of low, though, is sort of meant to kind of reinforce the level of competition. Like, I think if you make the prize support too good, you're going to run into what I call the EV zombies that are going to come and bring, like, the bestest, ultimatest stack and try to squeeze every bit of value they can and then, you know, crush these poor guys who just wanted to learn, who wanted to get better at standard. Or, you know, I think if we're going to keep it as a bridge from F&M, if we wanted to go from F&M to this, I think the prize support needs to be a little toned down because I think who this is trying to attract would really have a bad time if a bunch of spikes came and crushed it.
Yeah.
At least that's how I imagine it. But, I'm excited. Like I said, it's just another opportunity for me to play standard because I have to practice all the standard I can. So, I would definitely check this out if my store did it. And, I'm anxious to see what people open. So one of the last things we wanted to talk about is there was another article, and Katie, you actually suggested this, and you have been plugging the MTG diversity lately, which I think is fantastic. And so the article is called Protection from Silencing, and why don't you tell us about it?
So, ironically, I saw it while scrolling through my Twitter feed, which will become apparent later, but it's written by a person named Natasha Lewis Harrington, and it's kind of just... you know, her experiences within the magic community and how she kind of rose into feminism through a positive, like, social media, and then was able to apply that, you know, in her personal life, like in real life, which can be really hard to do, and kind of talking about her standing up for herself and, you know, for others around her. And I just wanted to touch on it because I feel like, you know, we see a lot of comments about, whether it's on Twitter or YouTube or anything, about chat being nasty or comments being negative or, you know, all these things on social media that can be really awful and are awful. But I don't think we give social media enough credit for being a positive place to, you know, express yourself where you might not be able to in real life. And kind of, like... I know for me, my Twitter is kind of my safe space. Like, the only people I have on Twitter are people that I know kind of have the same views as me, like to play magic or into nerdy stuff and like, you know, progressive things the same way I do. And I know that when I post something on there, I'm not really likely to get, you know, awful things said back to me. And it's kind of just a supportive place where most of the people I don't know in real life, but, you know, they feel like very close friends. Whereas, for me, on my Facebook, I have a lot of people that I know in real life, and I might not say quite the same things. Maybe I'm not comfortable with somebody reading about, you know, a blog that I might post or whatever it is. But I feel like there is a good opportunity on social media to cultivate your own little bubble and have it be what you want it to be. And I think that can be super important for a lot of people.
I just have to say I was so glad to read this because Natasha is someone that I've connected with through social media also, you know, a few years ago. And this made me really miss her writing. And I've always really enjoyed what she has to say. And I'm really glad that she put this out there. And I think she's absolutely right that social media is a really great place to cultivate friendships and learn and educate other people about issues. And I'm really grateful to her as someone who has really helped educate me about a lot of issues. And so I'm really glad that she put this out there. And I have to say, one thing I really loved about this article, in addition to the article itself, was that one of the at one point she references a person who, you know, is arguing about social, like arguing a point. And that person actually commented and said, "I'm so sorry I was disrespectful all these years ago. I've educated myself and I've learned about things." And I think it's really cool to see how, you know, people in this community really come together about these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that. It's weird because, like, when I was reading it, all I could think about was back in the day when I was on LiveJournal, and I got a lot of the feelings that she's having about, you know, the LiveJournal communities that I was part of and how I felt open to talk about things on there. With Twitter, I still am open, but I feel like I don't need that personally anymore. Like, I'm in a good place with myself where I don't feel like I need, how do I say it? Need, like, this extra support, if that makes any sense. I feel good to know that I'm surrounded by people that are like-minded. And I also appreciate being around people that maybe don't necessarily think the same way that I do, because I try to see their perspective, but mm-hmm. That's always just been me. It's just the Hufflepuff in me, I guess. I'm glad that the community is able to be here for other people and that we're able to learn things from one another and educate each other on things that maybe we didn't know. I actually, weirdly, just as a random aside, like at the open, when I sat down to play, there was a gentleman that was sitting adjacent from me, and he asked me about my pin. And he was like, well, what does that mean? And so I explained it to him, and he thanked me. And he was like, wow, he's like, I never knew about that before. Thank you so much for telling me. So if, you know, whether, you know, it's in person or on social media or something, you know, even via word of mouth, people educating each other on issues that are important, that's how we become more educated and we grow and we learn how to be more accepting to other people's differences, or at least try to see their point of view.
Yeah, I definitely credit social media to, you know, helping me change my viewpoints as well. Natasha specifically, Natasha and our friend Adrian and our friend Liz, you know, they were very crucial in getting me interested in feminism and getting me interested in social justice and things like that. You know, I'd been playing World of Warcraft for a long time. And, you know, I was very much in myself. You know, part of being privileged is that you really can't see past your own viewpoint. You know, you say things like, well, I've never experienced this before, so it must not be happening, or, you know, I don't have a problem getting a job because I'm trans, so why do you? And, you know, and it's just very hard to look past yourself. And I felt like with social media, I had to, like, I was seeing these stories come in, and I had a lot of really ignorant viewpoints that I had those viewpoints because I didn't know, like, I didn't know that other people had it worse than me. I didn't know that other people had it bad. All I could see was myself. And when I really let in other people and let in their experiences, it really gave me a wake-up call of, you know, you still deserve to have the correct pronouns used, even though you may not present a certain way. You know, when I first started, you know, transitioning, I was very elitist. It was like, oh my God, well, if you don't look like a woman, you don't deserve this. And that was so wrong. And that was so stupid. But, you know, living in my bubble and being privileged enough to sort of pass naturally, I didn't know any better. You know, and when I was able to really see other trans women who were still, you know, women still being deserved to be recognized as women, I was able to sort of acknowledge that and acknowledge how stupid that was, because I was able to see their lived experience and that not everybody is so fortunate. Not everybody's able to access the resources that I have. And I wouldn't have been able to really acknowledge that if I didn't have social media and have these women's stories pouring into my feed and having people even just tag me in them. You know, have someone say, like, you're kind of a dumbass, here's a story, and you need to fix yourself. And so, you know, just being forced to understand these other people's opinions and their experiences was really crucial. And I feel like, you know, if you really do want to, you know, the first step of getting past privilege is being able to see past yourself. And I think social media is really, really good at that. Mm-hmm. So last but not least, speaking of social media, two major Magic the Gathering pro players, Huey Jensen and Jacob Wilson, have both kind of come out. Huey actually wrote a coming out post saying that he is a gay man. Jacob Wilson, I believe, has sort of acknowledged it. Like, I do believe there have been a couple tweets about him being at Pride and him being him asking a boy out. And I don't know about you guys, but I think this is fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I saw so many supportive comments. And yeah, that was what really, like when I saw the post, I was like, oh, good for them. I'm so grateful that they feel able to do that right now, especially with the election and everything.
Yeah.
Whole nother tangent. But, but like, you know, I scrolled through the comments and usually, you know, you don't read comments. but I saw so many people that were like, great, awesome. Like, what's next on the docket? You know, like, and it's just becoming a more casual, more accepted thing. And I didn't see any negative things. And maybe, I don't know, maybe they got deleted or whatever. But, you know, I hope that everybody was supportive, because that's what I saw. And I was just, that made me even happier than, like, them coming out. I was like, I'm glad you can be you, but I'm glad that all these people are allowing you to be you.
Yeah, I thought it was really awesome, you know, especially to see, you know, we talk about representation all the time and how it really is important. And, you know, I was so thankful and so great and just so excited for all of the gay men that responded to Huey's post and saying, I'm a gay man from Michigan. I'm a gay man from Florida. Thank you. You know, being able to see themselves in him. You know, we do have many trans women in the community with Emma and Jadine and Natalia and myself, and that's great, but it's like everybody deserves to have somebody that they can see, you know. And now that we have people coming out as more not on the binary, and that's fantastic too. But, you know, to my knowledge, we really haven't had anybody gay, like a gay male that I'm aware of. And, you know, especially a gay male that's in the upper echelons. Like, these are guys that are in the inner circles of the game. This is a Hall of Famer. This is somebody doing coverage. This is somebody who runs with the likes of Owen Turtenwald, Reed Duke. You know, this isn't some grinder who maybe isn't going anywhere in the game. These are guys at the top of their game. And so to not only see gay men who are like you, but to see them be successful, I think that really means a lot. And it was just so heartwarming to see all these men that were like, that's me. And, especially because, you know, they don't necessarily, you know, we are still kind of stuck in our stereotypes, you know, and I think that, you know, to see a, you know, how can I word this? You know, just somebody who you wouldn't necessarily suspect, for lack of a better term. I think that also helps too, because, you know, there are, you know, going back to sort of not being able to see past yourself, you know, you sort of think like that you know, or that you could spot somebody. And it's like, no, you really can't, you know, you could be playing with somebody for ages and they might be bi or they might even be trans and you just didn't know. And so, you know, by just sort of dispelling those stereotypes that not every gay man likes Lady Gaga, not every gay man is feminine, you know, and just sort of like that, you know, I think that gives people a different idea of what gay is. And I think it was just an all around win. And I just have to say, Jacob Wilson's adorable. So I ship him with all the cute boys. Like, he mentioned that he was asking a cute boy to Pride or something like that. And I was like, you go. And then like, there were pictures of him and like Andrei Strosky. And I was like, yes, I am totally here. You and Martin Muller, you and Andrei Strosky. I'm here for all of it. Like, you deserve all the cute boys. Like, just, I was just so happy for him. And I thought it was really great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So was there anything on your minds before we wrap up the show?
I actually have a couple things.
Okay.
I normally have like nothing. So after we went to Dallas, you had talked about playing versus someone that was on Suicide Blue. Actually, I happened to be just trolling through Twitch like 2 nights ago, I think it was, and I actually came upon a streamer, and they were the person that actually created the deck.
Oh wow!
And yes, it was a very awesome lady player. I don't know if she actually lives in Spain, but she is Spanish.
Yeah, I've seen her around.
Yes, her Twitch user is Holy Diva with the O as a zero, and she created the deck and she's been tweaking it and just like rocking face with it, it seems like. And I really just enjoyed her stream. She played some awesome music. She seemed like she got along with her chat very well. And I just wanted to give her some love because she just seems really awesome. She's a pretty casual player from what I understand. She streams mostly Saturday to Tuesday, or Saturday through Tuesday. It says like 1800 GMT, so I'm not sure how that actually translates to other time zones. But she streams mostly before she gets ready to go to work. And then on Thursdays and Fridays, I think it's like a free-for-all. I think she's actually streaming right now. But yeah, so she created the deck, and she seems pretty awesome, and I would definitely recommend for people to check her out. The other thing is, I'm actually going to be starting my judge class this week.
Yay!
So, oh, yay!
Yes, I'm really excited. My friend Blake is going to be leading the judge class. He's going to do it out of his house right now with myself and a couple other people that want to be level one. And he was like, bring a laptop. I'll see you on Wednesday. And I'm like, sweet. So we're going to run through some tests and do some other stuff. So I'm pretty excited. And it's just been really hyped to like have him introduce me to other judges. And they're all like, oh, we can't wait for you to be a judge. And so I just feel really, really super hype about it. And then the last thing I had was a friend of the show, Christina Feigl. She is based out of Milwaukee. She actually went to the finals in APPTQ, and I'm really proud of how well she did. I'm sorry that I couldn't be there to see it for myself, but I think that she's a really awesome limited player. I think that if she decides to move on to constructed play, that she would be equally amazing there. And I think that she's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the greater Milwaukee area.
Awesome. Wow. I think you're going to be a great judge.
Yeah, I can't wait, Chris.
I hope so. Yeah. I'm like I'm trying to like envision in my mind, like, I'm here. How can I help? Thank you for you. And so I'm just ready. So I'm hoping that good things come from it and that I can try to do my goal for the end of the year, which was to be level one. So we'll see if we can get there in like 2 months.
Have you been practicing in front of the mirror? Like, you know, that's a good question. Let me go look that up.
I have not, because talking, not that talking to people is hard for me, but sometimes, like, I get worried when I put into, like, a position of, quote, authority and having to tell people things because I just want to be really chill about it. And not that you wouldn't be chill, like, as a judge, but, you know, having to maybe rein some people in or something. So I just kind of started thinking about, like, well, what if I become a judge and then this happens? And what if I don't know the answer to this? Do I need to grab somebody and who's going to help me? And so I'm just trying to remain calm and be like, someone will be there to show you the way. And then they'll be like, okay, little bird, fly, be free.
It'll judge be on great. Your own. Mm-hmm. You'll fly.
I just fly can't far. Wait to see it because you tend to wear your emotions on your face. And so, like, I just imagine you going up to a table where, like, something really ridiculous is happening and you're supposed to be, like, really stoic and firm, be like, I've got this. And I can see it being, like, really out there and your little eyes are just going to, like, bug out and be like, whoa.
That would probably totally be me.
And they're going to look at you and be like, what happened? Like, is they're going to see you freak out? And they're like, oh, my God, this is really screwed up, isn't it?
You're like, oh, you know, that board state dough.
That board state dough.
Or like say that the mat doesn't match the sleeves or something. You have to hold that in. You can't be like,
I want to see something so badly.
See, that's why I couldn't be a judge. That and the costumes. Like, I have a cat, so wearing all black is just not feasible because I do enough rolling as it is trying to get all the cat hair off. And they also said that I can't bedazzle, and they said that I can't wear epaulets. And so it was just like, well, I've got nothing then. So yeah, until the costumes become a little more flexible, I asked for like a green. I was like, can we do like a military green? And they're like, no. And I was like, well, I've got nothing then. So just being a judge is not in the cards for me.
But I can't believe you call them costumes. That's so hilarious. It's like, I'm dressing up for Halloween, got my judge gear on. We're ready to go trick-or-treating. Got my costume.
Although I have to say though, I'm not opposed to waking up in a judge shirt.
Oh, God.
Hey.
A girl can dream. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to this show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can follow me on both Instagram and Snapchat at HalCanSan. And you should subscribe to the Card Game newsletter for my writing and videos.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. Depending on how much of my computer I bring home over the break, I am going to try and do a stream. So we will do a Thanksgiving stream, probably not on Thanksgiving, but somewhere during that week. So look out for that.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. I did send something out this weekend, so I'm trying.
A for efforts.
Yep.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAstrus. That's OriginalAstrus. You can email me at OriginalAstrus@gmail.com. Twitch.tv/OriginalAstrus. My schedule is Tuesdays and Thursdays starting at 8:30 p.m. Central Time, so please come check me out. You can follow the show on Twitter at @TheGFBracket, and you can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.